This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I'm joined from Karatani. No, she's not in Karatani, she's in Whakatani, by Mawira Karatai. Karatani's a nice place.
It is, that's where my beautiful, amazing Auntie Kyla is.
She's not there, she's in Whakatani. How's Whakatani today?
Whakatani is sunny and warm, as always. Yep, how's Sawyers Bay?
It's sunny and warm.
That's good.
When I was in Wellington, I saw your ancestor's signature on the treaty.
I saw that you saw that, and I was just thought that was really neat. And I wonder how many people I know have seen it, but didn't take a photo and send it to me. And I just love that you do things like that, Sam. You are just such a cool person. You always do things like that.
And it's in his writing. Yeah. Almost, there's very, very few signatures in their own hand.
He was really proud of his penmanship. And it's, you know, he wrote a lot. He really embraced being able to use writing implements and was really proud of his hand and just proud of his use of language. And it's quite interesting. I think that is kind of filtered down the generations, because I see that in Jack as well, and whether he's writing in English or writing in te reo, the pride is so strong in him.
It's spelt with an I, not an E.
Yeah, which is funny.
I wonder when that changed.
I don't know. I think it was just, you know, like it's the Nai Kai thing as well. Like the, you know, it was just the way that sounds were written at the time. That's the only time I've ever seen our surname written with an I instead of an E.
Possibly the first time it was written.
Possibly. Although I know I would say that he wrote, because the bird, the black petero, is also Karitai. So, yeah, I must look and see how that was originally written. Good point. I'll write that down.
And we are continuing with our Coming Up for Air series. Who do we have today?
It is my great pleasure to introduce Xiong Zhong. Thank you very much for joining us today. It is an absolute pleasure to have you here with us.
Yes, me too. Nice to meet you all here, finally.
Kia ora.
I just hear your podcast, yeah, without knowing your face. No, I got a chance to see you.
Kia ora. Where did you grow up, Sean?
I grew up in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam, a dynamic city. It's like the hub of all of the companies, like big companies that don't always invest in Ho Chi Minh City. The city is really dynamic and very energetic. Not like our capital is in Hanoi, which is more traditional and more historic, kind of, yeah.
What was it like growing up there?
I feel it's really great to be growing in Vietnam, especially in Ho Chi Minh City. where there's so many cultures, because like it's like a hub of everything. So like people from the other city, like from countryside, the only garden in Ho Chi Minh City where they have like the best job opportunities and the best education in Vietnam. So it's really then like I repeat the dynamic for so many times, but it's really dynamic. Like you can see like people from all over the world as well. And it's also a really popular attractions for tourists as well. So on the direct flight from all over the world will stop by Ho Chi Minh City.
And what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, wow. When I was a kid, I always want to be working in hospitality industry. And it's well lucky for me because I know what I want to do exactly when I grow up. I very focused and dedicated, study hospitalities, and then I worked in hospitality industry for more than 10 years. And, at that time, I got a chance to, like work with like, EHEs and CSI's initiative. And then I know like, oh, we need to contribute something to, the communities and to the environment that we're living in. So that's why, that's when the time, like last year, I decided to take my master's degree in sustainable business. That's why I'm here.
What was behind that? What got you from working in hospitality to be thinking, you know what, I want to be doing sustainable business?
Oh, yeah, because like, hotels industry, they'll always try to do their best to attract more guests to the hotels. And then it's not just only the hotel industry, but I work in like online travel agents as well, where you're only marketing the destination and you're marketing the hotels and transportation so that the tourists will come to your country more and more often. So I see like the more you want people to travel, the more emission that you or the impact that you put on the environment. And then I saw like the company try to do some like little communities activities. I think that's not enough. It's just like they want to like greenwashing the other people by, you know, like we are travel agencies, we want to do something good for community, but that's not enough. I think the good way to do is to, you know, like how to have the people to travel properly and not travel frequently. Yeah.
And hospitality and the hotel business, travel business, it's always an interesting one, isn't it? Because there's so much emphasis on, you know, hang your towels up so we don't have to wash them and that's just going to save this. But you've flown in a jet to get there.
Wow, yeah. I think like some hotel industry just like put the signage there for the customer not to, you know, like put a towel on the floor so that they have to wash it every single day. But it's just like a very minimal effort. While, you know, like they just like put every single wage or wrap it into the same bin without, you know, sorting it or without recycling anything. So basically, I think like that activity is not really helping. It's just like have the hotel to save water and energy to wash your towels only. Yeah.
Let's take your music choice. Who have we got? Bruno Mars and Lady Gaga, Die With A Smile. Why this one?
Oh, I just like, you know, like if one day the world's going to be ended, I just want to be with the one that I love. That's it. That's why I chose that one. I think like it's not just only me, but everyone would love to be. So yeah.
I just woke up from a dream where you and I had to say goodbye. And I don't know what it all means, but since I survived, I realized wherever you go, that's where I'll follow. Nobody's promised tomorrow, so I'm gonna love you every night like it's the last night, like it's the last night. If the world was ending, I'd wanna be next to you.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orokanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi arohanui kia koutou, ka tawa hau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining and illuminating for you more and more each day, who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, globally, and no doubt throughout the infinite universe, we are living through and have lived through a time of tremendous change. And in many ways, I hope that this experience can bring about a global sense of unification, a global sense of oneness and leveling, a global sense of connection and compassion for ourselves and one another, wherever we are, whoever we are. I know that the world is diverse, and being part of a biodiversity restoration project for the last 16 years has illuminated for me daily the way in which life will always surprise us. Whenever we translocate species, and we're very fortunate to be able to do this thanks to Kati Huirapa and whichever iwi has mana whenua of that species, be it Ngāti Kuata for the Tuatara, or Makawhiwo for the Hastokueka Kiwi. This role of guardianship is a great privilege and a great pleasure to be able to embody and speak for, particularly for children of all ages, in my role at Orokonui. And if we bring these new species in that did once live here but have been locally extinct for many hundreds of years, there's always a time of uncertainty, and there's always a time of having our predictions tested. And this is what happens, I think, for all of us throughout our lives. We can venture forth in new directions with the expectations in place and find that the destination we arrive in is quite different from how we imagined it. And it's wonderful, I think, to be able to give ourselves the benefit of our own love and compassion in these circumstances and congratulate ourselves for trying what we wanted to try and realising that it wasn't right for us and that that's okay. My dear friend Upoko David Ellison, who is nearly 90 now, has been on the waiting list for many years for Ross Home, which is a retirement village in North Otiporti, Dunedin here. And he finally got his apartment, and we moved him in, and we hung up all his pictures on the walls, and we did all the things that he wanted, and set up his bed and his television and his chairs and his, you know, various tālka that he wanted on display or, you know, put away, and everything so that it was a new whare for him, a new home for him. And within a couple of weeks, he decided, no, that it wasn't right for him. And he has returned back home to live with his whānau. And, you know, we understand ourselves more and more, I think, each time we try these new ways of doing being, seeing, feeling. I'm really enjoying learning at the moment on my days off at the South Dunedin Mall, Centre Mall. And it's not actually a mall where you buy things, it's a mall where you learn things. And it's all free. Oh, very amazing. It's through Literacy Aotearoa. And I'm learning many new skills there. And how wonderful it is that we can do this. And it's been so refreshing for me. So I really hope for you that in giving new things a go or in actualising long-held dreams, you're able to appreciate the learning that lives there for you, whether it is the right way or not. Just like when we bring in the baby kiwis and we expect them to stay in the forest, and instead they come right out on the tracks and try to dig up the weather stations. Anyway, I look forward to talking to you all again soon. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Xiong Jam.
Xiong, I really enjoyed your podcast, and I'd like you to talk about the person that you interviewed. Would you like to introduce them?
Yes. He's a really intelligent guy, I must say. I have like zero knowledge about like what is like offshore wind, what is like hydrogen, and then power to X engineer kind of thing. But I got introduced to this guy when I trying to look for someone who worked in sustainability in Vietnam. So acquaintance that my friends know him, and then she just got me introduced to this guy. And then I just talked to him a little bit about his background. So basically, I didn't know like even that kind of energy exists in Vietnam. That's why I was so surprised that I can find him. And he's working in like electrical and hydrogen engineer. And he used to be like working in the lab with like 100% renewable able energy. So now he's just like working on various projects on hydrogen and ammonia value chains and offshore wind, which is really amazing, I think, for Vietnam.
And is there?
And he also a researcher as well. That's what surprised me.
Oh, that's so good.
And yeah.
Is there anything in particular that you want the listeners to really understand about his work, or something that you want people to listen out for?
I think like, because like in Vietnam, we don't have a, like I shared in the class for so many times, in Vietnam, we don't have something called sustainability. We just like try to follow some of the initiatives, such as like not using plastic straw or using less plastic bag, for example. But I didn't know like there is actually technologies in Vietnam that will have to generate the green energy. So I think when I found his connection, I just want to deep dive right into his expertise in the green energy industry. So I think that really triggered me to talk to him more in his expertise. Yeah.
Awesome.
Welcome to today's episode of our podcast, where we dive into the most pressing topic, shaping the future of renewable energy in Vietnam. Today, we'll have the pleasure of speaking with Mr. Long Phan, an electrical and power-to-X engineer at OWC Vietnam, who is at the forefront of offshore wind and hydrogen development. Offshore wind and hydrogen represent transformative opportunity, not only for Vietnam energy infrastructure, but also for its role in global sustainability. In this conversation, we will dive deep into the potentials of these technologies, the challenges that they face, and the future of renewable energy in Vietnam. So let's get started. So good afternoon, Long. Please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, sir. My name is Long. I'm currently an electrical and power to X engineer working at a renewable energy consultant named OWC. My key role at the company is to provide the electrical design, power system integration, techno-economic optimization analysis for renewable energy projects such as solar, wind, battery energy storage system, and power to X plants.
Wow, that sounds massive, that what you are doing. So how long have you been in the current position?
For the current position in the company, I already been working this role for 2 years. Prior to that, I also working as a researcher at Hanoi University of Science and Technology for another 3 years.
Wow, that's impressive. So what did you like the most about your current company?
Well, I would say that the opportunities to work at different technologies, such as solar, wind, and hydrogen, different projects around the world. So since I joined the company until now, I've been working in projects in APAC, in Europe, and in Americas. So it's a huge opportunity for me to do that as a graduate engineer.
Wow, that's amazing. So what excites you the most about the potential of offshore wind energy in Vietnam? And where do you see the most significant opportunity?
I would say that renewable energy in general is a future trend for Vietnam and also other countries around the globe. We can see that before 2018, Vietnam nearly didn't have any renewable energy sources. And we're starting to have more and more because of the policy from the government from 2018 to 2020. But there's a lack of policy now. But the government already set a target to reach 6 gigawatt of offshore wind until 2030. So I can see that there's a lot of potential opportunities for the offshore wind industry to develop in Vietnam.
Wow. So what are some of the key technical challenges that you have encountered in developing offshore wind projects in Vietnam, considering like it's a really new in Vietnam?
Yeah, one of the challenges is the offshore wind is the emerging technology. So the countries like Denmark and Europe already developed offshore wind a lot. But Vietnam, we didn't have any offshore wind project yet. We have onshore wind, but we didn't have offshore wind. So the technical challenges is one of the key challenges. Another challenge is the policies. We need policy from the government to push forward the development of offshore wind, which we didn't have right now. We have the roadmap. The government published the power development program recently, last year, but that is just a roadmap. They haven't had a specific policy to develop the offshore wind energy in Vietnam. So that is the second challenge.
So how these challenges being addressed and what role does the new technology play in overcoming them?
The way is, the way it is addressed for the policy is that there's a lot of pressure from the industry on the government to have new policy to support the development of offshore wind. Regarding the technical capability, we also have other companies from offshore to work on offshore wind projects whenever there's policy from the government. But again, we also want to utilize our internal sources. We want to use the Vietnam company to build offshore wind projects. So that is why when there is policy, and there will be policy, we will need to have more and more Vietnam company to be able to work and to build, to develop offshore wind projects instead of relying on the other foreign companies on this.
Wow, that's a good solution for that one. So how do you see the hydrogen powered complementing offshore wind in Vietnam renewable energy mix?
I would say in global, hydrogen is quite an emerging technology, so it's quite new. We have hydrogen technology before, but it is a technology that is produced from fossil fuel. So when you produce hydrogen, you also produce CO2, which is not good for the environment. The purpose of hydrogen can be used in different sectors, such as producing ammonia, producing chemical for oil refining, producing iron. So there's a lot of application for hydrogen in other sectors, and it's already applied. The difference is now we have a way to produce hydrogen from renewable energy, from offshore wind, which can ensure that the hydrogen is not emitting CO2, not emitting greenhouse gases. So that is the key differences between the old hydrogen, I would say, the black and the brown hydrogen, to the green hydrogen. So by utilizing the offshore wind energy and other renewable energy like solar and onshore wind, we can produce green hydrogen that can be used for other sectors, which can decarbonize other sectors' emissions in the future.
Wow, so I think your answer is somehow related to my next questions about what role do you think the green hydrogen will play in the decarbonization of Vietnam energy sector. Can you share a little bit more?
Yes. That is the key role of hydrogen, to be honest. Well, basically, the way we want to do it is to electrify as much as possible. So you know that energy can be like electricity, but it can also be like heat. And other sector also use energy. That is not electricity. So that's the difference between electricity and energy. So the first thing we want to do is to electrify as much as possible. And then we try to use the renewable energy sources like solar and wind as an electrical sources. And then hydrogen could play the role in the other non-electrical sources. So if you need heat, let's say, you can use hydrogen to burn, you burn hydrogen to create heat, or you could use hydrogen in other sectors like iron production or chemical production or ammonia production. And in the power system, hydrogen could be used as a storage. So imagine that you have solar and wind, which is very not stable. It depends on the weather. So you have the most amount of energy from solar when it's at noon, but then the load demand is not meeting the energy production. So you have the excess energy. The thing you can do is that to store that energy as a form of hydrogen, and then you can reuse that in another time when the renewable energy is not sufficient enough to meet the load demand. So that is the role of hydrogen in power system. But again, hydrogen also have different roles in other sectors like iron and ammonia and chemical production.
I see. So as a power to X engineer, can you explain how is this concept being applied to integrate offshore wind and hydrogen technology in Vietnam?
Well, the concept is quite similar to different places around the world. So I think all of us already learned physics in secondary school. So if you remember, yes, there's an experiment we did called water electrolysis. So you remember when you use two metals, with electricity, you put it into the water gonna bubble. There's going to be air coming out of the water. So that is not actually air. That is hydrogen and oxygen. So water is H2O. It's going to be electrolysis into hydrogen and oxygen. So that is basically it. That's basically the way you produce green hydrogen. You're going to have a big machine. We call it electrolyzer. And then you're going to power the machine by renewable clean energy sources. So you use water and you use clean energy and you produce hydrogen. So that is the way it can be done to produce green, clean hydrogen from renewable energy or all sorts of renewable energy, to be honest. But offshore wind is also a potential source because it's more stable. Compared to like the old way of producing hydrogen, you have a method called the methane reforming. So you basically produce hydrogen from CH4, which also produce CO2, which is not good for the environment.
I see. So like That is just like this very small chaos, you know, like when you study physics at school. So what challenge do you face in scaling up the hydrogens and the power to X solution, especially in the context of Vietnam developing energy infrastructure?
Yes, we have a lot of challenges. We work on hydrogen project around the globe, and the key challenges I realize now is the cost. So we aim for a clean earth, a clean environment, but we cannot just apply all technologies because it also depends on the economy and depend on the market. And currently the cost to produce the green hydrogen from electrolysis is way too high compared to the black hydrogen, the emission hydrogen approach. So that is one of the challenges. But this cost, we are seeing a trend of reducing, and we're actually working on projects right now worldwide that is on green hydrogen for produce green hydrogen and to green ammonia. So we can see that when there's a pickup in the market, when there's more and more hydrogen project, green hydrogen project, if in the market there's going to be an economy of scale, which is going to bring down the cost even further. So the key challenges is still the cost. And also we have other technical challenges because this is a new technology. So engineers is not really familiar with the technology. We have a safety challenges because hydrogen is very easy to burn. So you need to be careful with that. And so we also have other challenges of integrating renewable energies sources, which is very flexible to the electrolyzer. But in general, we are working on it. Everybody's working on it, and we also have a global target and Vietnam target for the 2030 and 2050 hydrogen production. So I'm looking forward to it. There's a lot of challenges, but that is what engineers for.
Yes. So you mentioned about many challenges regarding cost and the technology. So are there any solutions that currently being developed to make the technologies more scalable or commercial viable? Except like you mentioned earlier, like the more company doing hydrogens, then the cost will be lower. But how about the technology aspect that you mentioned earlier?
Yes. There's institution around the world developing the technology right now. So it's going to become down to the material of the electrolyzer. We use different material for the technology. These institution is looking at different technology that is cheaper to use for the electrolyzer with the same efficiency. So that is one way to reduce the cost. They also looking at other engineer mechanism to make the electrolyzer more safer when under production. They're also taking a look at the integration between renewable energy sources to the electrolyzer. So in the perfect world, we wanted to see the stable power sources to power the electrolyzer, but that's not the case for renewable energy sources. It's going to be flexible fluctuation. There's going to be fluctuation. So they also taking a look at that. We can use battery system, so they're gonna store the fluctuation energy and then resupply to the electrolyzer. So that's one way. But yeah, another approach is actually companies like us. We do the design. We are increasing our knowledge day by day, projects by project, to improve the efficiency of the project, of the hydrogen technologies. So yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned about like the growth of the technologies and the more companies doing it, and then regionally and Vietnam and internationally, we do have target for the green energy. So, what collaborative effort, either regionally or internationally, do you think are crucial to advancing the offshore wind and hydrogen?
Yes, it's absolutely very crucial because hydrogen at the end of the day is a product. You need to sell hydrogen. You produce hydrogen, but you need to sell it. Some region with a lot of renewable energy potential can produce the hydrogen with a cheaper cost. So they can sell it to region that is having a lower potential of hydrogen production. I've been working on this project that they ship the they produce hydrogen from Australia and New Zealand actually. So there's a lot of solar, a lot of sunshine in Australia. So they produce hydrogen from solar and they ship it to Japan. Japan is a country that, well, they are limited by their land, so they don't have a lot of land to build plants. They also a country that rely on their transportation rely on gas. So if you go to Japan, you're gonna see their taxi or their bus running using gas. So initially that is natural gas, but now you're gonna start seeing hydrogen bus. They're seeing hydrogen bus on in Japan. So that hydrogen is from another country.
Oh.
Same apply to other country around the world, America, for example. So yeah, you definitely need that collaboration. We call it the hydrogen economy. So that's not going to be produced in one country and used in that country. It's going to be trade, hydrogen trade between country. So you definitely need that strong collaboration between country in order to make this work and in order to reduce the cost even further.
Yeah. This is really informative for me as a sustainable business student. So I think there's only one last question for you, and this is more on your personal experience and your personal observation. So what makes you feel positive about the future of sustainability in Vietnam renewable energy sector?
I would say again, back in 2018, Vietnam didn't have any renewable energy. We run power system purely by coal, natural gas, and also hydropower.
Yes.
But since 2018 to 2020, we start investing more and more to solar and wind. We actually increased our solar and wind from 0% in 2018 to nearly 30%. In only 3 years of development. So there's a lot of potential, but since then we don't have any new policy, but I still keeping that positivity for the future of Vietnam. We have a lot of commitment. The Prime Minister already make a commitment in COP26 about the future of Vietnam sustainability and renewable energy sector. We have a roadmap published by the government. For the future of Vietnam, we aim to achieve a high renewable energy percentage in 2030 and eventually 100%, I believe, in 2050. So I still keeping that positivity. There's a lot of challenges right now regarding policy, of course, but it's not going to stop us from pushing this forward and achieving that sustainability to Vietnam.
Yes, I totally agree with you on that one as well. So as a Vietnamese, back to 2018, there's no sustainability course in Vietnam. So that's why I had to float all the way from Vietnam to New Zealand just to study sustainability. So actually, I got so many good knowledge about, you know, like the forefront countries that has been applying sustainables and sustainability activities in New Zealand. So I think that's also a good opportunity for me. Maybe I will share back to you later when I'm back in Vietnam. So
we could grab a coffee together.
Sure. So thank you so much for your time today. This session is really informative for not only me, but for my audience as well. So thank you for your times and all the best to you, Lam.
Yeah, thank you, Sun. Yeah, have a great day.
You too.
That was a really interesting podcast. So what was your main takeaway from it? What did you enjoy the most about the process?
I think the thing that I enjoyed the most within the process was the knowledge I gained from the speaker, which made me feel so small. And I think like the decision to make me back to school is really correct decision for me. So I think like sometimes you thought that you know a lot, but you know nothing until I back to school, and then I know like green energies, like blue energies, and then there's so many kind of energy that I've never heard in my life. Yeah, so I think that is really motivating me when I'm doing the process. So I know like there's still something more for you to learn every single day.
One thing I noticed about you in our classroom situation is that you just think so deeply about everything, and that when you talk about things, it's from, you're a real heart person. You think you feel it deeply.
Yes.
And so I wondered, what does the future look like for that? Like, have you got a plan for where do you go from here?
Yeah. So actually, I got an internship in Business South, and luckily, like I am able to work in sustainability department. Oh well, that is just only me in that department. But yeah, but at least I can gain some experience in the sustainability field, which really helpful for me in the future. And of course, in the future, I want to work in the sustainability industry that will help not New Zealand, but my country, Vietnam, as well, to be more sustainable. Yeah.
If you were going to invent a job for yourself, so you make all the rules for the job and exactly where you want to be, what would it be doing? Tell me what your perfect job is.
My perfect job is like, well, I always tell myself like you have to do something that you love. So I think I found a new love in sustainability. So I think my ideal job is to do something that will have the environment, that will have the person in it, and especially that you have to add some value into it. It's not just like, yeah, you're doing it without any value added. Yeah. It might be vague, but I think that's what I want to do. Yeah. I just want to do something good.
And I know that about you. I think whatever you do, you will bring goodness to it. That is for sure. I know that about you. So do you think that we can give people and the environment the same weight of importance and still get the planet fixed? Is it possible?
I don't think it's possible. I think if you want to do something, if you want to make something good, you have to, you have to balance it. And if you want to make the environment better, I think you have to prioritize the environment.
Yep.
Because like it's no way that both of them will have the same, increase in value or degree in values. It's just a time when you make the decision to prioritize on which part that you want to focus on.
Yeah.
And I think when you have a dedicated decision, then you will be more dedicated and you will be more hopefully work in that way. So I think there's no way that you can put like the human and the environment at the same place. Yeah.
Sam.
We hear quite a lot about the Vietnamese culture and how value-based that is, values of family and community and hard work and optimism. Is there a space for environment in there, and how does that fit in?
Oh, wow. I think like back then when I was a kid, when I studied in school, people teach us how to do like a in farming, they will have like, sometimes you raise the pig and then you have like rice fields and then you have chicken. So basically all of the waste from it would be in the circle. So basically they reuse every single thing. That's just a very simple way in Vietnam. Back then when I was a kid, like 20 years ago, people teach us how to use the waste within the farming environment. I think in New Zealand, they're still doing the same, but I don't think they try to use every single waste when they're farming the rice, right? They do have some leftover from the tree, like banana trees and stuff like that. They will make that one will be the food for the pig. And then for the big waste, it will be for the chicken. So it's just like in that circle. I think it's just symbol like that, but I don't know why the other country, they don't know how to reuse the waste. Yeah, so I think that is the value that Vietnamese can have to add into the environment impact. And we still continue to doing that way. It's just like the farming in Vietnam is not like the farmers and they don't have like enough education. They just like working based on their experience only. And in Vietnam culture, Vietnamese culture is like, if you have money, you don't do farming. That's the problem, I think. For the family who has like less education, they will do the farming. But for like, and they also will try to raise the kid, you know, like to get the proper education for the kid so that the kid will do something else, but not farming. So I think that is the challenge of Vietnamese community at the moment. And when the kid like work in the other industry, they will try to, you know, like destroy the environment instead of saving them.
I don't know if it'll survive translation, but is there a particular Vietnamese take on sustainability?
Yes, it's just not like take on sustainability intentionally, but because like we used to be a very poor country, so we just try to use every single thing that we have. So basically, all of the ways they just reuse it. It's just because we were so poor, we don't have money to buy, you know, like more food for the pig or more food, like special food for the chicken, special food for the pig. So we just reuse every single thing. I think that's a good way anyway. Yeah.
So do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
From like what pop up in my mind now is sustainability is related to some degrowth. And waste management and the desire to buy new things. So basically, if you want to be sustainable, you have to reduce your demand in buying new things and try to reuse everything until it's not able to reuse. Also the degrowth definition, I think that one is really new and that's just really interested in. It's because like we in the countries where growth is always our top and priorities, and now I was studying degrowth, you have to stop growing. I think like at the very first, I think it's really contradicting. But the more I study about it, I think that's the way that we need to go so that we can protect the environment. Yeah.
It's a hard concept for people in the more developed world to get their heads around, but for in a country, as you say, that's used to be poor in living memory, mm-hmm. concepts of degrowth must just be weird.
It is. That's really weird for me when I heard about it, because we always focus on growing. Well, even though we used to be poor, but now we're not like a developed country, we're still a developing country. So there's so many investment put into the countries, and then, you know, like create jobs and create opportunity for the country to grow. So basically, our government as well, they just like go to the other countries and asking for investment to our country. So if you're asking our people to degrow, they were just like, what's wrong with you? Why would you, you know, like refuse to get money? And yeah, that. I think that is the current dynamic concept now. So basically, they just want to earn more money. So they're a very small amount of person who is really advocate for sustainability and degrowth. Yeah.
I think if you can separate that earning more money from exploitation of people and place, then it makes sense.
Yes. Exactly. But that's only makes sense when you study about it.
I have some questions to end the show. And not very much time, so we're going to have to wriggle. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Oh, I think the biggest success is that I got accepted by University of Otago so that I can open the new job career for myself in sustainable business. And I think this will be my way to go in the next 10 years to be more focused on sustainable and more focused on the environment rather than focus on growing.
What's your superpower?
My superpower is active listening. Sometimes, nowhere I can see that I'm very quiet in the class because it takes more time for me to digest the information And, you know, like, my thinking process is a little bit slower than the other person. I know that I try to improve it, but yeah, sometimes it takes more time for me to improve it. But yeah, it takes a longer process for me to digest the information and to come with the ideas. So sometimes I'm just like quiet in the class.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
I am not. I think I would be more in the supporter role rather than the activist. I will support the activist rather than I am the activist. I just like, yeah. I think like it depends on people. They will have different interests. But I think I'm more interested in supporting other people rather than to be an activist myself.
And what's the biggest challenge you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
I think the challenge now is in the waste management. because I, in my internship role, I got a two projects. The first one is the waste minimization, and the second one is how to financially earn from waste minimization. So basically, when I look deep into the waste minimization, and I found there's so many rabbit holes there. Especially like Mawera, when I talked to you about my thesis regarding the construction. So I got to know like 40% of the construction waste goes straight to the landfill, which is really massive. And I think like that is really a drop post and a challenge that I have to face. I think in the next 2 or 3 years. To how to reduce the waste in general. Yeah.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
I think in order to reduce the waste, you only buy things that is really necessary for you. It's really essential for you. Otherwise, don't buy anything. Reuse whatever you have.
Oh, good advice. I was just thinking... before, when you said about how you're quiet in the classroom and you take time to think, and I know that I've observed that, but when you speak, there's always something really important and useful that comes from it. And you're very funny, and you're very caring of your classmates, and you have added so much to our class this semester. I'm excited about your thesis, and I'm excited that you've picked something that really matters. And and I know that you're going to add value in your new role, and I wish you all the best. And it has been such a joy to be in a teaching space with you. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Warren, Sam.
We are going out to Sophie Madeline. Take your love.
But I wouldn't care if I could take your love with me. And so you that you would always be around.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic.
So I just had to find a way to take you everywhere I went.
We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. We were joined today by Sheng Cheung with his episode of Coming Up for Air, focusing on renewable energy in Vietnam. With Mawira Karatai, I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Ratiwa.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.